Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
It seems like, Jonathan, that we have been talking about a lot of change in the church, and change is taking place, but more so these days than I think in recent history. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the Bible is not changing. No. Certainly, theological truth is not changing.
No.
But in the context in which we find ourselves, it hasn't been that long ago that we heard about 21 Egyptian martyrs for the cause of mm-hmm. the gospel beheaded in front of a camera. And you just didn't hear those things that much as common yeah. as we do now. Certainly, martyrdom has been common throughout the centuries. That's an extreme example. But there's other changes taking place at the local church level. There's change that's taking place in how churches prepare their persons for ministry, their ministers and even lay people for ministry. And that's what we want to talk about today. Even though the title has to do with ministry training in the local church, I really want us to focus upon how this is shifting yeah. more than anything else.
You mentioned the great degree of change we've seen over the last decade or two. Is it because there was such little change between maybe 1950 and 1980?
Certainly, there was a small amount of change during those years relative to the pace of yeah. change now. We held on to the way we did church. Culture allowed us to do that. Let me just give one example. In many churches, not all of them, many churches have an appointment system, but in many churches, you always found a pastor through the pastor search committee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still very common. But now, like, for example, one of our sponsors, yeah. Vander Blumen Search Group, they are helping churches match with pastors.
Yeah. 20 years ago,
you would have never no. heard of something like that. And so those are the type things. And by the way, thank you, Vander Blumen Search Group and William Vander Blumen for your sponsorship. Those are the type things that we are seeing today that we would not have seen in the yeah. 1990s.
Is it because of technology? Is it because of just catching up with the culture or influencing yeah. culture more?
It really has to do with the pace of culture change, okay. and technology is a large part yeah. of that as well.
Well, the first point in the podcast today on ministry training in the local church is that theology is important for all Christ followers, not just church staff.
You know, there's a misunderstanding about what we traditionally call theological education.
Yeah.
In the sense that theological education is, let's take this even a step back and let's talk about the whole dichotomy. There is this perception that there is the laity and mm-hmm. then there's the clergy. And that divide does not exist in the New Testament. There are offices, but there's still everybody who is a minister. The laos yes. really refers to the people of God mm-hmm. rather than a classification of ministers. So the first thing that we have to say is ministry training is important, and a critical part of that ministry training is theology. And we need to understand that more and more, that theology is important for everyone. When we started relaunching Bible study literature at Lifeway, one of the lines of literature that we said was just absolutely important was the Gospel Project, because mm-hmm. we wanted to introduce one part of our curriculum to be theologically centered, theologically driven. Not everybody wanted that, but we wanted those yeah. who needed and desired that to have it as well. So theology, yeah, it's important for everyone. We'll be talking specifically about the issue of theological education in the local church and ministry training in the local church, but everybody should be theologically trained. That's what we are trained to do as Christ followers.
And that kind of leads into number two. You mentioned the Gospel Project, and is that Sunday school and small group discipleship is a regular form of theological education.
It is. For many years in many of our churches, we had what was called the Christian Education Department,
mm-hmm.
and one of the more classical positions, they're still there, but not as many of them as they used to be, was a minister of education who was responsible for getting curriculum or who was responsible yeah. for the training and learning program. In the past, there was often Sunday school on Sunday morning and then some kind of training that took place on Sunday night.
Yeah.
That has shifted significantly. I understand that church practices have significantly shifted, but that does not mean we need to abandon theological
yeah,
training.
We still need ministry training and ministry training, even though there may not be the historical times for that to take
and,
place.
And that brings back the whole basis of why do we have small groups and why do we have Sunday school classes? Certainly we have them for fellowship. Certainly we have them for ministry.
Yeah.
Certainly we have them for life issues. But I think that's one of the primary places that we can actually yeah. train yeah. people theologically and immerse them in some of the theological truths that are in Scripture.
Yeah. So increase discipleship, increase theological education in the small groups.
Absolutely. And I think that that should be one of the purposes of at least some aspects of small groups in churches.
Now, another option that churches do, and not really a either or, but a both and, is we're seeing more and more special extended seminars and training take place in the church. Those are becoming almost commonplace.
Yeah, let's go back to historical church practice. And I'm not talking about first century. I'm talking more about 20th century. Mm-hmm. For many churches in the 20th century, this was the pattern. Sunday morning was Bible study. Some churches called it Sunday school, maybe something else. Yep. Okay. And then that would flow into the worship service or vice versa. Then Sunday night was the training time. It was the time that you equipped people for specialized training or more in-depth training. And so we had these days or these times that were set apart for Bible study and extended training. Well, what has happened, and we've had a podcast and a blog post on Sunday evening worship.
Yeah.
As Sunday evening worship has disappeared, so has that slot.
Yeah.
We had that slot that was available for training, but we no longer have it now. So how is it being replaced? I see it being replaced in really two ways. One, seminars or conferences, and you'll get training through those, and the church may sponsor something, or they may have a simulcast where something comes in. The other way is the digital revolution and Ministry Grid. MinistryGrid.com is a form of a training that we have, because that's missing. That's a gap in many churches today, and so it is being replaced, but it is being replaced with different types of offerings, such as special seminars or digital offerings.
Yeah, a church may offer something in the spring and the fall where, you know, for 3 or 4 hours they cover Old Testament, you know, basically an Old Testament survey,
right,
or a New Testament survey, or a theology, you know, a theological topic, and they serve dinner and then have a couple hours. I know I've been in a couple churches that have done that as well. So, I mean, that's an option. And you see a lot of times maybe summer Bible conferences, I know, are popular in some areas.
Yeah, yeah.
It's similar to what we would call a revival, but at the same time, it's more just Bible teaching on a certain topic every night. We maybe have different guest speakers in and really highlight a certain theological premise.
Many years ago, I would see advertisements that would say revival and Bible conference. Mm. And it would have some of the revivalistic elements of it, but then it would be in-depth teaching on really some type of doctrinal topic or a book of the Bible. Mm-hmm. So both and.
Number four is that, and we talked about this earlier, the online revolution. Online education has made theological education a lot more accessible to laity.
Yeah, I never know. Is it MOOC or MOOC?
MOOC.
It's MOOC. And what is MOOC? It is primarily seminaries. It doesn't have to be seminaries. Making available to everyone theological education. Mm-hmm. It may be some broad-based theological education. Mm-hmm. It may be something that is an introductory level. Many times it's even free. And that's where the seminaries are saying to lay people, we want you to be familiar with our seminary, and here is the way that we are making it available to you. And it works the other way as well. Seminaries are also providing training for ministers.
Yeah.
And that can be done online.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a seminarian many, many, many years ago.
The internet didn't exist then.
No, it didn't exist. Because it really did not exist. I graduated with my master's in 85 and with my doctorate in 88. There was no internet.
Yeah.
Al Gore had not done it yet. It was still there to come. And so I had to have 6 years on campus.
Yeah.
I had to go to class during the daytime.
Ooh.
Nighttime classes were not even, which made it difficult if you're trying to support a family.
Well, you did the dual role as a banker.
As a banker.
But trying to squeeze that in with seminary.
Around all my classes.
Yeah.
All those things have just changed dramatically now. And now you can choose to go on campus. You can choose to go on campus full time to seminaries. You can choose to go for short bursts of time. You can choose to do all of your studies online, and that's a whole different world. When I was a dean of a seminary, we were just introducing, and it really wasn't online that much.
Yeah.
What it was, we were sending DVDs and then kind of PDF files to go along with it.
Yeah, it's more like correspondence courses.
It was correspondence. We called it online because they...
They called it online?
Well, they had to open their email and get the course outline at the time.
Okay.
But eventually it became, you know, streaming video, yeah, and it became all online. But online education is a revolution, yeah, in itself. Many of the seminaries have adapted well and, mm-hmm, adopted it well. Yeah. Some have not.
Yeah.
And those who have not are really seeing the consequences of falling enrollment.
Yeah. And we have a lot of dealings with, obviously, the Baptist seminaries and Liberty as well.
Sure.
And I know that Liberty is, because of their online presence, Liberty is one of the largest universities, not just seminaries, but largest universities in the world now.
Yeah, and their religion school and seminary have a combined enrollment of 20,000. Just the undergraduate and graduate portion of ministry training, the formal education, yeah, and ministry training. So it's a huge thing. It's happening at seminaries all over the world, yeah, right now, and it's happening, of course, in universities as well. But theological education is coming to the church. What we are seeing, and this, I'm going to push this on to number five, because this is a perfect segue. Seminaries are partnering with local churches for on-site teaching. One of the first things I did when I became a dean of a seminary was to develop a partnership with a local church. We did not have a lot of students in that local church, but it was an experiment. It was, uh-huh, an experiment where the students were fully employed by the local church.
Oh, okay.
And we would deliver theological education to them through intense modules, not internet.
Yeah.
We would come and teach for a week, and
okay,
then we may have another professor come and teach for a week, and then they may come up for 3 or 4 weeks to the seminary. But they went through a 4-year program.
Wow.
And they got their experience in the local church. They all had roles in the local church. There would usually be a minimum of 7 of them at any one time, mm-hmm, sometimes as many as a dozen. And they would do so many different things in the local church. And then they would get theological education delivered to them. That partnership took place. And I got to say that those students that I know of that went through that are some of the best equipped students, because they were getting on the field training,
yeah,
and they were getting theological classroom training as well, and we were delivering it with some of our best professors. So that partnership was great.
And that kind of leads us to number six, is that pastoral apprenticeships can train both theologically and methodologically.
Yeah. My church, Brentwood, mm-hmm, Church, there's really several different things going on. We have mentioned this in the past, that Brentwood is a church that has multiple campuses. One of the reasons it has multiple campuses is because a lot of churches that are dying are saying, take us over,
yeah,
let us survive under your umbrella. And so they're beginning to do that. But you know what their number one challenge is?
Finding leaders for those.
Finding leaders for those campuses. So what are they doing? They're building their own pipeline of leadership. They're doing that with apprenticeships, where you actually come on in an apprenticeship, internship fashion with the local church, and they're also seeking to partner with seminaries, mm-hmm, to deliver some of the theological education. How well that can scale remains to be seen, but I know this. Going back to the example that I gave of the church when I was a dean of a seminary,
yeah,
those students tend to be incredibly prepared, because they're getting the perfect mix of on-the-field practical church ministry with deep theological education. Now, I gotta offer a caveat at this point, and it may be because I've been in theological education myself, but I think that seminaries and theological education are still very valuable.
Yes.
I know that there are some pundits and some ministry leaders that say seminaries are a thing of the past. I just don't see that. I more see that seminaries are adapting and changing, and their delivery systems will be different.
Mm-hmm.
But we still need people. We still need organizations that provide theological education.
Well, as you know, that I am a student online, fully online, and a master of theological studies degree from Criswell.
Right.
And it's different than if I was even partially online, partially in person in a seminary. I mean, just the differences in communication, workload, different things like that. There are some drastic differences in a fully online degree and a fully in-person degree, like you were talking about, that you got.
Yeah.
Just in just the way things are done and how the classes are structured. So there is some differences, and I think there's benefits to both.
Right.
The benefits that you had, you know, you talked about how you had these guys that were in the classroom all the time. They're really getting a heavy load.
Totally immersed in the studies, yeah, almost full-time.
And then on mine, I'm learning the studies, but I've also got the full-time job and everything. So it's not fully concentrated on, you know, the studies.
Right. I remember that if I look back upon my 6 years of seminary, and those are ancient days, I realize they a lot of my learning took place with interaction with students.
Yeah.
As we were talking, not just in some type of online forum, but we were talking to each other, we're talking in the hallways. So that adds to the value. Yeah. But then the online degree means that so many people can take theological education, can take courses that would not be able to do so otherwise.
Yeah, there's no way I could go to any of our, well, even the SBC seminaries, and try to do that in a fully immersed, you know,
on-campus
type of experience.
Right.
There's just no way, and still support a family, have a full-time job, and those kind of things too. So it's kind of, you get the best of both worlds, and there are just differences between the two.
Absolutely, and strengths and challenges. And really, you know, I don't want to advocate one model or another. What we're looking at is a continuum, and at one extreme of the continuum is all online. Yeah. At the other extreme is all on-campus, no online experience, and then there's all kind of variations in between. Each of those variations have strengths and weaknesses. Yeah.
And each of them are applicable to different types of people.
That's
right. Different situations.
What's your best learning environment?
Yeah.
I was talking to a seminary student who chose not to go online. And he was telling me he would love to go online, but that's not the best way he learns. Yeah. He learns best in a classroom environment. For whatever reason, he said that's his learning environment. I've heard others who say just the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm an introvert. I love to be doing things where people aren't. So I might do well in an online environment if I was a lot younger.
The final point that we have here in the ministry training in the local church is that local churches should seek to raise up the next generation of theologians and ministers.
There's a misunderstanding, I think, at large in many churches today, is that the seminary should be producing our ministers, our vocational ministries, our vocational ministers. That is absolutely not true. The churches should be producing our vocational ministers, and the seminaries then should train them. The history of most seminaries, particularly in North America, is this. A church would make a recommendation for someone to enroll, but it would always originate with the church.
Huh.
And we have gotten this idea, this concept that, the seminarians need to be training more people and this is what they're doing. No, the local churches need to be raising up these people. Ask the seminaries, partner with the seminaries, request of the seminaries or any other type of theological training, formal theological training, and then, as a result, partner with them. But raising up leaders should be the responsibility of the church, not just seeing people come to church on a regular basis, but asking the questions, is God raising up the next generation of missionaries, of pastors, of children's ministers, and the list goes on and on in our church? Are we equipping those who will later equip others?
When you were a pastor, how did you identify potential ministers?
It was always informal. It would be just a sense of someone who would just seem to have a desire to teach, a desire to preach. Every now and then, someone would come to me and say, I have a sense of God's call in my life.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about a call.
Yeah, and that would happen. There would be times, and I remember one particular church member, that I could just sense that God was pulling him in a certain direction, and so I began mentoring him and spending time with him. And we were driving to visit someone, a hospital visit, and I looked over at him. I said, you ever think God might be calling you to vocational ministry? And he paused, and he said, no. And 6 months later, he was at seminary. So it was calling out the called, if I could use that expression. Because I had a little more experience in ministry and because I saw how God had worked through people, I was able to recognize something in him that he maybe had not recognized in himself. I didn't have a formal process. Maybe I should have. But it was the informality of people coming to me or me going to them. And I would mentor the men.
That kind of goes back to building those relationships with younger people in the church and seeking out, you know, and looking and finding what God is doing in their lives, not only to help them grow as Christians, but potentially grow into ministry and full-time vocation.
That's right. And I know a lot of pastors who one of their primary focus points of ministry is to be mentoring other people so that they may be calling out the called and they may be seeing those who are going to be the next generation of ministers in our churches.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Vanderblumen Search Group. They are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblum and Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That'll do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
The times, they are changing. That sounds cliche. I understand that fully. But who would have thought that as we're doing a podcast, well, first of all, who would have thought a podcast?
Yeah, I know. That's,
that'd be one thing. And then who would have thought that the primary sponsor would have been a search firm that helps partner churches and other Christian groups with prospective leaders in those churches and groups. So the world is changing. Theological education is changing. Ministry training is changing. The Word of God is not. It is constant, but we must learn how to best apply it in the context in which we find ourselves.
Thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.